All right, thanks, Jamie. We're trying to be very clear in what we're doing and going forward. Again, our purpose is not for us. We know who we are. Our purpose is so that we can be more effective in reaching the community. And it's exciting to be part of this church. It really is. And everything that's going on. I got a letter or card this morning, a thank you card that I want to read to you before I get started. It says, "Dear Berean family," and this is from Betty and Roger White. "The 6 weeks since Roger's stroke have shown how blessed and thankful we are to be part of this precious family. You've blessed us in so many ways, cards, phone calls, and texts, visits at home, in the hospital, rehab, meals, offers to help, cutting grass, helping with chores, and so many other ways. Your prayers and encouragement have been especially precious. Your prayers have greatly uplifted him and helped in his recovery. He has made continual progress and graduates to outpatient physical therapy next week. While it will take a while to fully recover, we rejoice daily in God's great mercy and grace that it was not more severe, and the doctors are confident in a full recovery. Please continue to pray to that end. Visits and calls are always welcome. With praise to our gracious God, Betty and Roger White." And so I just want to share that with you. Church, it's been great to see how you've reached out and cared for him and Betty as well. And just that's what we do as a family and want to continue to do that. So be praying for him. He was trying to come out this morning, and with everything that's going on, he just couldn't quite get there this morning. So feel free to give a call, text, and write to him. And as you see anybody else that gets sick or has any issues there, feel free, or if you see somebody that's not here that you're used to seeing, feel free to reach out and just be an encouragement to them. That's what the church family is really called to do. So this morning we start a new series. The series is called Thy Kingdom Come, and it's taken from what is commonly known as the Lord's Prayer. And so that's found in Matthew chapter 6. If you want to open your Bibles there with me, I'm going to get to that in a minute. And we're going to talk about this together this morning, Matthew chapter 6. Now, here's why. Prayer is important. Do you believe prayer is important? How many agree? Prayer is important. Okay, good. It should be part of our life at all times, but prayer should especially be part of our lives when big things are going on. And at our church, we're talking about changing the name of our church, which is a huge thing to do. It's really kind of small, but it's a huge thing because it makes us feel like, well, our identity is changing, and what's this really mean, and oh, this is change, and it's so hard, and it really is challenging. I get it. I'm with you, and I've got to answer the phones at times, and it's going to change that. I'll be like, and that happens and such, but bigger than that, a much bigger deal is what's going on in Puerto Rico this week. I mean, changing a name is nothing in comparison to the change that they're going through, right? Or Mexico City, where they had an earthquake and hundreds of people died. I mean, the landscape is changed in many different ways. Jobs are changed. Florida, there's so many things that's going on in Florida where people have lost so much. And some of my friends, and I'm sure some of your friends, have lost a lot of different possessions. Their life has changed. They don't have a job to go to because their job has basically canceled work for a while, or different things like that that's literally going on in Florida or in Texas. I mean, the change that we're talking about here is so, listen, it pales in comparison to what's going on around the world. Would you agree? I mean, that's where our emphasis is. And some people that are going through some real hard times, they're going through some change, and it pales in comparison to all that. So to put that in the grand scheme of things, it kind of pales in comparison. It just changes things up a little bit. Not that it minimizes, because it is a big deal. So this drives us to pray, but also, while we see all of these other things that are going on, it should drive us to pray also. Our nation, our communities, our church, our families, they need us to pray. Do you believe that prayer is important? In Psychology Today, a magazine that gets published, I think it's every month, an article back in, I think it was 2014, says this, opens out with some statistics, says, according to the Pew Research poll, over half of America pray every day. In 2012, a poll found that over 75% of Americans believe that prayer is an important part of daily life. Other polls indicate that Even some atheists and religiously unaffiliated individuals admit that they sometimes pray. It's kind of like, well, just in case there might even be a God, I'll offer up a prayer and who knows what will happen. So they give five things that talk about the evidence that prayers that it's real and that it actually helps you out. Number one, prayer improves self-control. It improves self-control. Have you thought about this? Studies have demonstrated, he says, that self-control is like a muscle. That is, it gets fatigued. You can only do so many push-ups before your muscles give out. The older you get, the less push-ups you do, right? Similarly, activities that require self-control are fatiguing, making it more difficult to make good choices the more you have to use self-control muscle. So you are more likely to lose your cool or engage in mindless eating when you are mentally exhausted. Recent research indicates that prayer can help you get more out of your self-control muscle. Research participants who said a prayer prior to a mentally exhausting task were better able to exercise self-control following that task. In addition, other studies demonstrated that prayer reduces alcohol consumption. It's fascinating. Which may reflect the exercise of self-control. Findings such as these suggest that prayer has an energizing effect. Number two, here's the second benefit for prayer. And this is from Psychology Today. This is not like, we haven't even gotten into the church stuff yet. So prayer, number two, makes you nicer. Isn't this great? Prayer makes you nicer. Researchers found that having people pray for those in need reduces the amount of aggression they express following an anger-inducing experience. In other words, prayer helps you not to lose your cool. So to pray for the person that cuts you off in traffic is much better than aggressively following them. Just saying, it makes you nicer. Number three, prayer makes you more forgiving. Researchers found that having people pray for a romantic partner or friend made them more willing to forgive those individuals. If you're praying for them, well, I guess you should forgive them too. Number four, prayer increases trust. Recent studies found that having people pray together with a close friend increased feelings of unity and trust. This finding is interesting because it suggests that praying with others can be an experience that brings people closer together. Social prayer may thus help build close relationships. Number five, prayer offsets the negative health effects of stress. So researchers found that people who prayed for others were less vulnerable to the negative physical health effects associated with financial stress. Also, it was the focus on others that seemed to be contributing to stress buffering effects of prayer. Praying for material gain did not counter the effects of stress. That's interesting. By the way, this is not a religious, this is in Psychology Today, okay? Praying for material gain did not counter the effect of stress. So thinking about the welfare of others may be a crucial component of receiving personal benefits from prayer. It's fascinating. There's five benefits of prayer. So in secular world, they would look at prayer and they would say, there's something interesting about this. Prayer actually helps you from a health-wise, it helps you relationally, helps you stress and get down, and all these other things. So prayer actually is a good thing. So people that know nothing about God believe that prayer is important. My question this morning is, do you believe that prayer is important? I want you to think about that. Do you believe that prayer is important? So I want to describe that. Jesus, when he begins his earthly ministry, just a little background of Jesus if you don't know. Jesus, when he was born, he didn't all of a sudden get to be in the front of the pulpit as soon as he started to speak, right? It wasn't like, okay, he can talk now, there's the Son of God, let's put him up in the synagogue and let's have him teach everyone now. That's not how it works. Matter of fact, we don't see anything publicly going on until he was around 12 or so years old. He had one public incident where he spoke and the people gathered and like, wow, there's something amazing about this kid. And that was about as far as it went. And then it wasn't until he's around 30 years old that he began to speak publicly and work with the disciples. disciples and things like that. And so we pick that up in the Gospels. They record the beginning times of when Jesus is speaking and doing public things. And so in the first message that he preaches, I remember my first message I preached here, it was on Hebrews chapter 11. It was a Sunday night back in February of 1998, I think it was, or something like that, which was a really long time ago. But I remember that first message. It was terrible, you know? I didn't want to go back to that. But here's Jesus' first message. Jesus never had a bad message. You follow me? But man, this message, when you walk it through and you see the things that he did, he offended everyone, I think. He was an equal opportunity offender all the way through, where he irritated the religious people. If he was trying to get into the good schools, you know, for religious thought, that was going to be null and void. That would not happen after this message. If he was trying to get in with the people that liked certain things, it was not going to happen after this message, because he basically offended everyone through this message. We call this the Sermon on the Mount. And so he gets to this point and begins to talk about prayer. So in his first message, he talks about prayer and identifying what prayer really should be. And within that, there's some confrontation. And within that, there is certainly a lot of instruction that we can gain from this. And so we'll pick this up in Matthew chapter 6. He's speaking. And so verse 1, we'll start there. And it just kind of gives you the run into this as to what he's saying. So he says, "Beware of practicing your righteousness before other people, in order to be seen by them, for then you will have no reward from your Father who is in heaven. Thus, when you give to the needy, sound no trumpet before you, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may be praised by others." And he's speaking of these in the synagogues, the hypocrites, and everybody in the crowd. Like, this was a head-turning moment. You know, and there's in church sometimes where I'll say something that you're like nudging the person next to you, like, that's interesting, right? Here's a head-turning moment where he's speaking while he's not saying their name or who they are specifically. He's saying what they do, and everyone knows who he's talking about here, and he'll get back to that then. So it says, some hypocrites, they do this, and everybody knows. They walk around, they're blowing their own horn, and they're letting everybody know, hey, I just gave them $20, you know, and that's kind of how things went. He says, truly I say to you, they have their reward. Verse 3, but when you give to the needy, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your giving may be in secret, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you. And that's where we get our offering envelopes from, by the way. We try to give in a secret way, and we don't publicly let anybody know, hey, this is what I'm doing. We don't do a dance down the aisle. Hey, I got 100. No, I got 150. We don't do all that. It's very private. And we're glad for that. Amen? Phew. That'd be a lot of pressure. Verse 5. It takes a focus off of why we're here, right? So verse 5, when you pray. So he jumps right in. He's talking about giving to the needy. And then he gets into this. And when you pray. Let me just stop there. I want to parse this out a little bit and identify what he's saying and explain this a little bit. To say when, it indicates a regular pattern. It's a regular pattern. When you go to have lunch today is you're going to have lunch today. The expectation is it's a pattern that's there. It's consistent. It's kind of something that you're looking forward to and something you're going to do. When you get dressed today, praise the Lord, we all got dressed today, right? And when you eat dinner, when you do this, there's consistency there. Here Jesus is identifying that prayer is consistent. It ought to be consistent. So he says, when you pray. The problem is that many people don't have time to pray. I don't even have to ask you to raise your hand on this one. That is the number one struggle with prayer. Number two is falling asleep during prayer. Has that ever happened to you? The number one problem is, when do I tuck time aside? Like, I've got to run here and run there. I've got to get my kids over there. I've got to go pick up my parents. I've got to go take this to the store. I've got to take this back to the store because it's the wrong thing. I've got to do this. And we're in constant motion of running. So when do you fit time in to pray? Most of us don't even get enough sleep at night, let alone to tuck in some me time with God. it really comes back to whether we truly believe that prayer is important. Do you realize that? If you believe that going to work is important, you'll make time to go to work. If you believe that being on time for work because you get fired if you're late is important, then you'd get there on time, yes? So you're making your schedule based on the importance that you see certain things to be. But here's what I find most happens with most Christians, myself included. Prayer becomes something that is more on the back burner than the priority. We say it's important vocally. We say absolutely, amen, brother, preach it. And it's like preaching to the choir. Is prayer important? Everybody raise their hand. Absolutely. So when do you pray is the question. Man, this is an easy guilt trip moment, isn't it? For all of us, myself included, this whole series is to help me to grow. And as I'm growing, I want to help you to grow as well in this prayer aspect of our lives with God. A Christian that A Christian that does not pray is essentially a practical atheist, aren't they? Is that a heavy hitter statement? Do you catch that? You're practically an atheist. You say, I believe in God, but practically, I don't want God to be that part of my life. It's not important enough that I'm going to pray before I purchase, pray before I do, pray before I say, pray even before I eat. So essentially, you know the Father exists, but you reject his presence in your daily life. If I stop there, we could kind of close and everybody feel guilty and, okay, yeah, I need to pray more. And we'd all be there. So very simply said, we need to set time aside every day to pray. And my challenge today at the end of the message, the challenge in the response cards is, will you do that? And for you right now, you might be thinking, you know, while you tune out here and there and during the message, maybe you'd be thinking, what time of day will you pray? In business world, the person that says, here's when I will get this done, is the person that will get it done. You follow me? Like if you say, hey, I'd really like to get that done, and somebody says, oh, yeah, no problem, I'm sure I could do that. But they don't put a time on it. They don't answer the when can you. It's kind of like saying, hey, I'd love to go out and hang out with you. I'd love to go out to dinner with you, or I'd love to have you over. And those kind of statements happen but without ever having a date. It's like, well, sometime we'll actually get there. And I know we're busy, busy, busy. But better than all of that is our prayer life. We say the same thing. I know I should be a person of prayer. Listen, why don't you mark it down in your calendar? What part of the day will you give God? Would you get up 15 minutes earlier to spend time with God? Just 15. Would you stay up 15 minutes later? Would you turn off one episode of whatever you're watching in order to spend time with God? In order to make this part of our life, if we're saying that truthfully prayer is important, if we're saying that, then what we're going to say is, I will consistently spend time with God in prayer. So then we go forward here. He says, and when you pray, and that's just one phrase, right? And I got four more verses to go. It's going to be a while. And when you pray, you must not be like the hypocrites. He's picking on the same group then. For they love to stand and pray in the synagogues and at the street corners that they may be seen by others. Truly, I say to you, they have their reward. And this is what they would do. They'd go into the synagogue and they would, with loud voices, with impressive voices, you know, they would kind of, dear God, you know, in big words. And they would begin to speak about God in prayer. And everybody around would be like, whoa. You know, and everybody would stop as they're saying this prayer, and you kind of pat them on the back when they're done. Man, that was a nice prayer you just prayed there. And so they would do this in a public kind of setting so that other people would hear and be impressed with them as a prayer. So then the prayer gets the credit, not God. Do you catch that? The prayer gets the credit, not God. It'd be kind of like your pipe burst in your house, in your kitchen sink, a pipe burst, and you got cold water, you know, it just blew out, and you got water everywhere, and you call your buddy up and say, I'll pick on Mike today, and you call up Mike, and Mike's like, oh, I'll fix that. You got water running everywhere in your kitchen, and is this a stressful day when that happens? Yeah. So Mike comes in, he pulls up and says, oh yeah, I got this, I'll take care of this. He shuts the water off, fixed the valve, and he says, hey, listen, why don't you go relax in the living room? Let me do a couple improvements while I'm here. And he goes, and because, you know, he's got this job that didn't work out, and he's got all these cabinets in his truck, in his trailer behind his truck that would fit perfectly, and the other guy just canceled, and he's like, well, I don't know what to do with this. You know what? I'm going to put them in here. And it's got granite countertop and everything. Could you imagine this? I mean, what a nice guy. And he goes and does this. You're sitting in the living room. This happens in 5 hours, actually an hour, because that's how long it takes on TV to do it. And so he guts the kitchen, puts the new kitchen cabinets in, and puts the counter on, puts a new backsplash on, and just then you're like, hey, you want me to order pizza for you? No, I'm all done. Watch it, come out and check it out. And I got the pipe fixed. And you come out and you're like, I had Formica countertops before, and my door was broken, and now I've got a brand new kitchen and brand new countertop. Whoa, I can't believe this. And you're like, wow. And you call a friend up and say, come on over. Look at what I did to my kitchen today. Whoa, wait a second. And Mike's like scratching his head. Wait, you called me for help. You were the asker of help. And you sat on your couch while I did all the work. And now you're saying that you get the credit for all the work that I just did for you? Wait a second. And that's what the prayer does. The prayer says, hey, look at me. I'm praying. Look at what I can do. I've got this platform of prayer, and God's going to answer my prayer, and it's all about me and what I can do, as if my words and what I'm saying will get God's attention because I'm in front of everyone else. Or it's like a teen that wants a new iPhone 8, right? And while their friends are over, they say, Mom and Dad, Mom and Dad, and all the friends are looking. What's going on here? Mom and Dad, I know how much you love me. I know my success for my future is so important to you. And I know the best way you can help me be successful is with a brand new iPhone 8. And I know that you'll get that iPhone 8 for me. Pre-order it right here on this website. You know, and all the friends are like, wow. And the parents do it. They sign up. They're like, you're right. You're right. We should do that. And the friends are like, man, you're the best asker I've ever seen. Right? It's like congratulating the person that just prayed. Like, really? You didn't pay $1,000 for that. You didn't sign the paper. You were the asker. You were the beggar. You're nothing more than that. And that's what praying is. I'm simply going to God and saying, God, I need you. I'm humbling myself before God and saying, I can't do this without you. Prayer is private, not public. It's private. It's when you pray, it's consistent, but then it's private. So the focus, to focus on the prayer is to focus on the beggar who has no authority, no power, no ability to get anything or to go anywhere. So instead he says this in verse 6, but when you pray, here's the when again, it's consistent, you're consistently praying, when you pray, go into your room and shut the door and pray to your Father who is in secret, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you. So go into your room, go into your place, shut the door, and just talk to the Father alone. Here's the deal. Jesus is not condemning public prayer. He's addressing the one who prays in public for themselves and for themselves to be seen. Here's a good thought. The greatest prayers are never heard by anyone but the Father. You catch that? Sometimes we look and we're like, man, that is a great prayer. The greatest prayers are only heard by the Father because it's my heart to Him. I love getting around people that are newly, they've come to find who Jesus is, and they're just new part of the family, and they're like, I want to do this praying thing, and they pray out loud, they pray in public, they pray with someone, and I love like having prayer meeting with someone or just praying with them, and I'll often ask somebody else to pray and stuff like that because the pastor praying, there's like something like I'm a tier above. There's not a tier above, just saying. And so I'll ask somebody that's new to the faith to pray. And I love it because it's just like they're talking to the guy next to them. They don't add all the Christianese into it. You follow me? They don't add all the extra, stuff that I think I should say this too. It's just like, okay, God, so you're hearing me, right? Yeah. So God, I kind of need this. And, Uncle Joe's been really getting on my nerves. Can you fix that? And it's just straight. When you pray, pray consistently and pray in private. Be alone with God. And then the next one, verse 7. When you pray, again, he's saying the same thing. When, it's consistent. When you pray, do not heap up empty phrases as the Gentiles do. What's the King James Version say? Vain repetition, right? I grew up thinking vain repetition. I grew up on the King James Bible, an awesome translation. What's a vain repetition? To be vain is to, I love what the ESV says for our culture today. It's empty phrases. It's just empty. It's meaningless. It's just I'm saying whatever and it just doesn't mean anything. You ever have someone talk and you feel like what they're saying is totally empty and you just tune out? I mean, maybe you're saying that now, but you probably shouldn't, okay? Your empty phrases, he says, they're impressive. He says, don't heap up these empty phrases as Gentiles do, for they think that they will be heard for their many words. Don't be like them, for your Father knows what you need before you ask. So here's what they would do. They would come up with these huge words, these 25-cent words, and they would put them together, and they would have these common phrases as if they would be able to get God's attention through bigger words or through these phrases that were very well articulated, and it was the common prayer for this and the common prayer for that, and you'd have these things going on consistently. And so they would say, here's the deal. We can say these things, and this will get God's attention better. Or if you say it with bigger words and sometimes, man, I've gotten caught into that, where I'm like, well, I'll just pray bigger words. Isn't that the dumbest thing ever? You ever think about that? If I can just pray in bigger words, it's like people treat prayer like there's a secret password, They try to use these impressive words that they never use. Is God really impressed with our words? The one who's all-powerful, the one who knows everything, the one who created language. Does God ever get impressed with that? So some people will say that Jesus is condemning pre-written prayers. I would disagree with that. Can you pre-write your prayers? Yes. Nehemiah chapter 1 is a pre-written prayer. As Nehemiah, back in the Old Testament, Nehemiah is this guy that is a cupbearer to the king, and he's a Jewish person that's concerned about his country that's just been obliterated, and it'd be like if you are from Puerto Rico, you move to America, and you're looking at what Puerto Rico is going through right now, your heart is aching for them. And so in the same kind of sense, here's Nehemiah who's aching for his country, and as he does, he's beginning to pray this prayer. He's weeping and he's mourning as he hears how bad it is in Israel, in Jerusalem. And so he's praying this one prayer, and he says, I did not cease to pray this day and night. It's speaking to this simple prayer that he's pre-written and written out. Not that it was an empty repetition. It was something that he wept over and prayed through every day. Do you know that you can write out your prayers at times. Sometimes I'll, in my time alone with God, I'll literally write out my prayer. I would call it a journal, where I'm writing my prayer out to God and saying, okay, God, because I'm so distracted, or because I just want to write things out instead of speak things out. I'll write out what I'm praying to God, and sometimes I'll reread that and repray that prayer as well. And I see that at different points. Sometimes I'll see there's a common book of prayer, and there's other books on prayer. Stormy O'Martian, who's written several books on prayer, has just come up, not just, but she came out with a book of common prayers to be able to use for the common person, in a sense. And I think that's helpful sometimes, because it helps us to do a little bit more searching in our own heart as we're talking with God, and helps us to stay focused sometimes as we're talking to God. It's easy to get distracted while you're praying, isn't it? I find for me, a lot of times I need to have a 3x5 card down next to me, so that while I'm getting distracted and the squirrel comes, you know, and I'm over here, I need to stop and say, okay, I'm thinking about this. I just need to write this down, because I'm worried about not fulfilling this over here. I'm going to write this down, and I'm going to come back and talk to God some more. And I'll do that throughout my time alone with God that way. Prayer is simple. Prayer is simple. It's consistent, it's private, and it's simple. Prayer should not be complicated. It should not be complicated. It should not be complex. It is simple. You can't impress an all-knowing creator with words. We're made in his image. So let's not try to impress. Let's not make it complicated. Let's not correct people of, well, they didn't pray quite right. Did they talk to the Father? That's what it's all about. And that brings us to the last point. In verse 9, pray then like this: Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. Hallowed be your name. Prayer is directed to our Father. The direction of prayer is to our Father. And in this, he's speaking about the Father, and this is... It's a concept that's carried in the Old Testament, but not quite in the same way. And so while Jesus is saying this, and he says this throughout his first message, he talks about God being our Father, which is fascinating, because he truly is the Son of God. And he's then combining us in with that and saying, he's not my Father, he's our Father. It's not just he's a father to the nation of Israel. Now it's specifically and intimately, he is our Father. For many people, you have different perspectives of what a father is. For me, my perspective of my dad, I had a great relationship with my dad, and just loved being around him. Anytime I could be around him, I'd love to work on cars or work out in the shop or be outside or just hanging out at the table and just chatting. Love that. It's been about a year since my dad passed now, and I miss my dad. And if I could have, listen, you understand this. If you've lost someone near and dear to you, my dad's probably the closest person I've ever lost. If I could have one more conversation with my dad, I'd give a lot to that. You understand? Man, just one more conversation. Here's Jesus saying, our Father. You could have a conversation with the Father in heaven at any point in time. He's always there. He says, hallowed be your name. To be hallowed is to be holy. It's the same word that's used, same Greek word as it's written in Greek here, same Greek word that's used for holy. It's identical there, where holy is his name. He is set apart from anything that is impure and unclean. He is absolutely, totally right. We cannot even fathom God's holiness. I mean, think about the best person you know, and you know it's not yourself because you know yourself better than that. Think about the person that you respect the most. You say, man, they are the perfectest perfect person I've ever seen. And I know that's probably not a word, but perfectest perfect person ever. And you look at them and you say, yeah, they're up there. God does not even come close to that. His holiness is millions of miles above that. He's never thought anything wrong, done anything wrong, and he cannot do anything wrong. That's how holy he is. And yet, he desires a relationship with us. You see, it's easy to be friends with you, because you're like me. I know a lot of you, you know, like you've really messed up in different areas, you know. but so have I. So we kind of work this thing out where, yeah, I'll give you grace, you give me grace, we're good. You know, you scratch my back, I scratch yours, kind of a thing with grace. But God doesn't need to do that. God is absolutely 100% perfect. He's never made a single mistake. What kind of friendship do you have with a guy that's never made a mistake? He's never had a bad thought. He's never had a straying look. He's never driven improperly. He's never built anything wrong. Let's flip that over. What kind of relationship can he have with us? Do you get irritated with people that are messed up? I mean, we'll be honest, right? It's challenging. Some people, like, they just tick you off because they can't seem to put their laundry away. Or they just say the wrong thing, you know, and you just know, like, if you just keep your mouth shut for 30 more seconds, we'd have been fine, but you had to open your mouth and just keep things going. It's just bad, you know, and you have that, and you're like, oh, it's so frustrating. Look, here's the reality. All of us are that times a thousand in respect to God's holiness to us. And he says, I'm your father. I want a relationship with you. Even though he's absolutely 100% holy, he wants a relationship with us. And so he did everything he could to establish that by sending Jesus Christ, his only son, to pay for the sins of the world so that those that believe in him can have a relationship with God. Isn't that awesome? Do you ever get over that? You shouldn't. That should blow your mind every time you think about it. Every other religion outside of Christianity, by the way, believes you have to earn your way to God. If I can earn my way to God, then God's not so holy. You catch that? If my good can outweigh my bad, then God's not so holy. He came to us. In Ephesians chapter 2, verse 4, Paul is describing God, describing our relationship with God. In order for us to have a relationship with God, God would have to be this. He says it this way, he is rich in mercy. What is it to be rich? We talked about this with the teens on Wednesday night. What is it to be rich? Yeah, I have everything I want. Is Bill Gates rich? Well, yeah. Does he ever look at his credit card statement at the end of the month saying, man, how am I going to make that payment? I mean, honestly, does he have to worry about a limit to his credit in any kind of way? He's rich. God, it says in Ephesians 2, God, who is rich in what? Mercy. He is so rich in mercy, he would have to be, because he's an absolutely holy God, he's never done anything wrong, and he's putting up with us. So he desires to have a relationship with us, which in order to have that happen, as John says, he loves us so much, he loved us first. He is chasing after you and I in order to have a relationship with us. We're not going to him and saying, hey, since I got all that, you know, I'm Mr., you know, Joe Schmo, Mr. Spiritual kind of person, and I'm going to go be with God because I've got all that. That's not it at all. It's flipped over. It's that God is chasing after us because we need him. He is rich in mercy, not a little bit rich. He's everything rich and would need to be in order to chase after us. It looks like, you ever see a runaway dog? Where the dog's like, I'm free, I got out of the gate, and it's running, and you know, oh no, kids, go chase Fido, he's running down the street, you know, it's not going to be good. And you're all like, I've never run so much in my life, and I got to get Fido, and he's running a circle, and his you know, tongue's hanging out, wagging tail and everything, he's all excited, it's been great, I'm free, and you're chasing him down. Here's what God is, he's chasing us down like that, as sometimes we're running from him, putting ourselves into traffic and about to get run over and doing all kinds of things. And God is saying, I'm so rich in mercy that while you put yourself in a bad situation, I'm still chasing you. While you blew it morally, while you blew it in your marriage, while you messed up in your job, while you messed up your finances, while you did all of those things, I'm still chasing after you. And I can tell you firsthand that I've experienced that. And I continue to. That I know that as I take one step away from where God wants me to be, it's as if he's chasing me down, saying, "What are you doing?" Not with a lightning bolt. Not to beat me down, but to put his arms around me and say, "Come on. Come on, why are you stopping?" Many of us spend our lives running instead of stopping and inviting God into our lives. We're too busy for God. We're too busy to pray. I'm so glad that God's not too busy for us. Aren't you? Prayer, I think, is the most significant part of a Christian's life. Do you believe that prayer is important? Is it a consistent part of your life? Not just when, "Oh man, things are going bad. Lord, help me get there on time because I'm really running late today." What I'm talking about, there's different types of praying. That's on-the-go praying. I'm talking about getting into your room, shutting the door, and spending time alone with God. Leave your phone outside the door. You follow me? And don't turn the TV on. Story I heard a while back, and you might have as well. I just love this story. I don't know if it's true or not, but it's a good story. So a pastor once asked his church to pray that God would shut down a neighborhood bar. The whole church gathered for an evening prayer meeting, pleading with God and begging him to rid the neighborhood of the evils of this bar. Well, a few weeks later, lightning struck the bar and it burnt to the ground. He'd say that's answered prayer. Having heard about the church's prayer crusade, the bar owner promptly sued the church. When the court date finally arrived, the bar owner passionately argued that God struck his bar with a lightning because of the church members' prayers. Well, the pastor, he got on the stand, he backtracked, and brushing off the accusations, he admitted the church prayed, but he also affirmed that no one in his congregation really expected anything to happen. The judge then leaned back in his chair, a mix of amusement and perplexity on his face. Finally, he spoke. "I can't believe what I'm hearing. Right in front of me is a bar owner who believes in the power of prayer and a pastor who doesn't." Do you believe that prayer is important? Do you believe that prayer is important enough to set time aside and be consistent in your private time alone with God in a simple, just you and God way? Do you truly believe that? Church, I'm calling you to take a step of faith. That why don't you take your response card out on the bottom of your bulletin. And if you don't know, I do this every week so that I can be praying for you, so that you can share prayer requests with me. It's not so I can get into your life and get too many personal things. That's not what it is. I want to consistently be praying for you. And sometimes it's for you to take a step of faith and a commitment to the Lord and say, "You know what? I need to do this." So this is one of those days where I'm saying, are you ready to take a step of faith? Number one, maybe today for the first time, it's I need to take a step of faith and follow Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior. Where you say, "I get it. His mercy has chased me down. And I'm finally today, I'm accepting Jesus Christ as my Savior." If that's you, would you mark that? I'd love to follow up with you, pray for you. See how I can care and equip you there for what God has. The second one then is I'm planning to spend quality time with my Father in heaven each day. Quality time means I'm consistent, private, simple, and just with the Lord. Where I'm just asking you to make that commitment. And maybe you take your phone out and you grab your calendar. You know, you pull that up and you say, okay, what time in my day can I be consistent? Maybe it's 7 o'clock at night that you just say, guys, in my family, I'm going to pull away for 15 minutes. Start with 15. Don't start with 2. Start with 15. Because you know what it is. It takes you 3 or 4 minutes to even get your brain in gear, yes? And then you're like, okay, I'm praying. Okay, now I'm praying. And before you know it, you're praying for several things. And write some things down to pray for. But start with, God, I just praise you for. Start with just praising God. Hallowed be your name. God, thank you for chasing me down. Thank you that your mercy is that rich. Thank you that you're not poor in mercy. You're rich in mercy. Would you take 15 minutes a day? Just start there and let it build from there. Maybe God takes you to a journey where you're spending 3 or 4 hours a day in prayer. Could you do that? Yeah, could. You could. So would you fill this out for me and the elders? We'd like to just pray for you and care for you through this as well. The question really comes back to this one thing. Do you believe that prayer is important? For where we are as a church, we're making some important decisions. The important decision is, are we going to reach our community with the gospel of Jesus Christ? That's the important decision. And as we do that, we want to change our name. Listen, church, we need to be praying about this. This is a big step. We need to be praying for people in Puerto Rico. They're going through a hard, hard time. Could you imagine being without electricity for a week? I mean, a couple years ago, we had what? Some of us had a week. Some had 3-4 days. I mean, we complain when it's out for a couple hours, right? Could you imagine a week, 2 weeks, or even a month? Some are into that. You couldn't charge your phone. You couldn't do anything. Are we praying for them? Prayer is important. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you an opportunity to worship the Lord. This is your response time to what you've heard. And so I'm going to ask the guys if they would come up. And we're going to listen to a song is a very simple song, "Oh Come to the Altar." And I'll dismiss sometime in the middle of the song. You can be able to get up and depart as you feel comfortable. But I just want to kind of stop and listen and meditate and focus in on the Lord as we do this. So I'm going to pray and have the guys come up, and then we can give and we can worship God in that. God, thank you so much for all that you're doing. Thank you for our opportunity to give, and you've been using this to be a blessing to those in our community in many different ways, and Lord, to people all around the world even. I pray that you continue to use this for your sake, for your name, not ours. And Lord, I pray that you would help us not just to talk about prayer as being important, but Lord, we would make it an important part of our life. And we'll give you the praise through Jesus, I pray.